25. On a chilly fall day in Butte, Montana, Jimmy materialized next to a dumpster in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant. He closed his brand new laptop and tucked it into his brand new leather suitcase. He straightened the jacket of his brand new blue pinstriped suit and walked around to the front of the restaurant. He looked up at the restaurant sign, which read, Pork Chop John's.
Good, he thought. I'm where I want to be. Now let's see about when.
The sign featured a cartoon drawing of a pig wearing a crown. According to the sign, the pig's name was Pork Chop King.
Not much of a king, Jimmy thought, if all he promises is to let people eat his subjects.
Jimmy entered the restaurant and casually perused the menu, which was made of plastic tab letters, and hung on the wall above the electronic cash register. It still thrilled Jimmy to see things like cash registers work in his vicinity. Jimmy ordered a fried pork chop sandwich and a 10-piece order of pork nuggets. He paid with an extremely beat-up $20 bill he'd purloined from Agent Miller's wallet when nobody was looking. It was wrinkled and filthy and taped together, but it was also minted in 1998 and would not arouse suspicion. As he waited for his meal, he nonchalantly picked up the top copy from the stack of Penny Press classified ads next to the door. The issue was dated September 21st, 2003, just as he'd expected. Jimmy ate his sandwich and pork nuggets. He had the dining room to himself for most of the meal, but toward the end, two men drove up in a dirt-encrusted Geo Metro. One was a bit heavy, with thinning hair and a beard. The other was thin, with shoulder-length hair, black-rimmed glasses, and an inhaler. They loudly discussed which fried pork items to purchase, and whether they wanted to get a fried egg on top for an extra dollar. Jimmy discarded his last three pork nuggets and left, grateful to not have to listen to their inane chatter anymore. Jimmy walked across the parking lot, across the street, across another parking lot, and up to the entrance of a small apartment building. It looked like it had originally been a motel, but had been converted to more permanent housing within the last few years. Jimmy walked to the door of the unit farthest from the office and closest to the road, the room where plumbing noise would be least likely to bother the neighbors. Jimmy put his ear to the door, hearing nothing, as he'd expected. Jimmy raised a fist to knock politely on the door, but then thought better of it. He turned his fist sideways, shifted his weight, and pounded on the door loud enough to be sure he'd be heard even from the far corner of the apartment. After a moment passed with no answer, Jimmy pounded again. In the far distance, Jimmy heard a faint voice say,
"One minute! I'm in the bathroom!"
"Yes," Jimmy muttered. "I expect you are."
Jimmy waited patiently for a moment, then heard the deadbolt and saw the doorknob turn. The door swung open, and for the first time in 30 years, from Jimmy's point of view, he was standing face to face with Tyler. Back when he was chairman of the Wizards of Camelot, Jimmy had made a point of talking to every wizard in his area about their lives, their interests, and where and when they had come from. Knowing that Tyler was from Butte, Montana, had made finding his address simple. Tyler had not aged a day. Literally, that was one of the chief perks of being a wizard. Jimmy had aged quite severely, which was one of the chief drawbacks of being an ex-wizard who spent 30 years mostly outdoors. For a moment, Jimmy was worried that Tyler wouldn't recognize him, but that fear evaporated when Tyler said, "Oh, it's you." Jimmy said,
"Tyler, it is so good to see you again."
Tyler silently turned around and retreated back into his apartment. At first, Jimmy wasn't sure if he was being invited in or being told to go away, but Tyler hadn't shut the door, and eventually he gave an irritated look back over his shoulder, as if to say, "Well, what are you waiting for?" Jimmy was surprised by Tyler's robe. It was different than he remembered. It was still red and purple vertical stripes, but now it had gold decorative accents and much fancier cuffs. Jimmy asked Tyler what time he was living in currently. Tyler said, "The Renaissance," but offered no further information. Jimmy did some fast mental math and realized that Tyler had lived through at least 300 years of European history since they'd last seen each other. While Tyler's robe was a surprise, his apartment looked exactly as Jimmy had expected. It was packed half full of bulk-packaged rolls of toilet paper and paper towels. The other half was mostly filled with full garbage bags, stuffed with empty packaging, used paper towels, and hundreds of cardboard tubes. Tyler's bathroom habits were legendary amongst the wizards. He was the only time traveler who had never gotten used to using the bathroom facilities of the distant past, simply because he had never tried. Instead, any time he had to move his bowels, he simply teleported and time-traveled back to this apartment and used his modern bathroom like a civilized person. He would appear, use the restroom, disappear, then, as far as the apartment was concerned, reappear immediately and use the restroom again. After another round of lightning-speed mind math, Jimmy figured that if Tyler hadn't skipped any large chunks of history, his toilet must have been in constant use for well over a year by now. He considered asking to see the toilet, then decided that, should the opportunity arise, he would specifically ask not to see it. Tyler sat on a bale of rolls of toilet paper and looked sullen. Jimmy knew that, of all the wizards, Tyler had the most reason to hold a grudge against him. He'd put Tyler through a torturous ordeal. He'd ghosted Tyler, making him invisible and insubstantial, and, as a side effect, making him feel as if he had spent many days suffocating. After being caught, Jimmy had tried to kill Tyler and all of the other wizards, and had never shown any real contrition after he failed. He chose to let Tyler set the tone for this conversation, and he did so by staying quiet until Tyler chose to speak.
"I knew you'd show up eventually," Tyler said.
"How'd you know that?" Jimmy asked.
"Because you showed up in my past and told me that you'd visited me in the future."
"Yeah," Jimmy said. "That's a pretty good hint."
"You said," Tyler continued, ignoring him, "that you'd come to me in the future and convince me to help you."
Jimmy said,
"I was hoping you'd say that."
Tyler remained expressionless.
"I always wondered what you, of all people, could have possibly said to me that convinced me to help you."
Jimmy was on shaky ground here. Clearly, Tyler remembered some interaction between them that had taken place in Tyler's past, but was still in the future, from Jimmy's point of view.
"I never told past you what I say right now to make you want to help me?"
Jimmy asked.
"Interesting."
Tyler winced.
"Me telling you that just now is why you won't tell me, isn't it?"
Jimmy said.
"Probably. Sorry."
Tyler sunk slightly and rolled his eyes.
"Okay," he said. "You're here now. At least I'll find out. Go ahead. Say what you're gonna say. Say whatever it is that convinces me to help you, the man I hate most in this world."
Jimmy shrugged, took a breath, and said,
"Well, Tyler, you've lived through my future. You know what I have planned. You already know that you'll give me the information that I need, and clearly it can't work out too badly for you since you're still here. So I guess the best reason you have to help me is that you know it's gonna happen, and you might as well get it over with."
Tyler sagged even further and said,
"I was afraid you were gonna say that."